there are some fundamental changes happening to the education system in Wales.
The needs of children are changing because the world is changing.
A new curriculum.
Changes to the way teachers and school leaders are trained.
New teaching standards.
And new ways of evaluating school performance.
We all need to be kind of treated as individuals rather than a group of children.
This podcast will get to the heart of what's happening.
Speak to the decision makers.
And ask them the questions we'd all like the answers to.
I want every day to be the best day they could possibly have in education.
I'm Louisa Martin-Thomas.
And I'm Mike Bubbins.
From Welsh Government, this is Addysg Cymru, Education Wales. Hello and welcome to the second episode of Education Wales. Today we're really getting stuck into the changes happening to the curriculum.
Yeah, we're in a room in the Welsh Government building in Cardiff, a few of us very cosily tucked away here. I'll give you the full title here, the Head of Curriculum Design and Development for Welsh Government and all-round good egg, Ty Golding. Hello, Ty.
Hello, Mike. Hello, Louisa.
And also with us is Kath Lewis. Kath is a music teacher from Puthcawl Comprehensive School, which is a pioneer school. So welcome to you, Kath.
Thank you.
We've got lots to get into today. I've been speaking to two academics, Professor Louise Haywood and Professor Mark Priestley, and they've been studying what we've been up to here in Wales. You can hear their thoughts a little bit later on. But before that, we have a bit of a special guest.
Yes, we begin with the man who started all this, the whole process, back in 2014. The Welsh Government approached Professor Graham Donaldson to review the education system in Wales. His report, Successful Futures, which was published a year later, contained 68 recommendations, of which the Welsh Government adopted 68. His work forms the inspiration for the changes that are happening now. He is essentially the daddy, so I thought I'd tell him that. Graham, first of all, I just want to say thank you for this. My wife's a deputy head teacher. When she saw the email, she was quite blown away. In fact, I was interviewing you today. Quite jealous. Bit of a rock star to my wife. She describes you as like Richard Pryor for me. So that's, praise indeed.
That's one of the better ones I've had.
Is that one? There we go, Paul. She is really quite jealous. There we go. Well, first of all, then, I'd like to ask you why you think this change is needed.
Yeah, when I was invited to undertake a review of the National Curriculum in Wales, I came to Wales with a completely open mind. And what I did was to spend the best part of 4 or 5 months just going round Wales and talking to as many people as I could in schools, teachers in schools, young people, but also more widely. And what became very clear to me very early on was there was a huge gap between broadly what people would like to be happening in schools and what they felt was expected of them in terms of what they were doing in schools. And that focused particularly on their perception about the way in which the curriculum was framed and the expectations that were in that curriculum. And what we seem to have arrived at is a curriculum which was created back in 1988. It has had subsequent reforms to it, but basically the same structure and same thinking as was there back in 1988. Was now operating in a way that was meant to prepare young people for a future which in 1988 we couldn't even have begun to imagine. So we had a problem of a growing disconnect between what it was that children needed to get from the time that they are at school and what the curriculum was saying that they should get during the time that they're at school. And that led to a whole range of problems. So there was an issue of the expectations that were growing on schools, pressures on schools, to respond to the changing environment that they're working within, which was leading to serious issues of overload in the curriculum. That was one of the main problems that was around. But probably equally significantly was that the nature of how you define what it is that young people should do in schools needed to be rethought, because the 1988 curriculum was based on the very laudable assumption that what we had to do was to ensure that all young people were exposed to broadly the same things, and that the the curriculum would define what should be covered during the time that young people are at school. So it was a curriculum that defined coverage. What it didn't do was to ask the more fundamental question about why we're doing all of that. So what became very clear to me was that we needed to re-engage with the purpose of the curriculum and the purpose of education, and therefore a big driving force in terms of this reform is to move from that coverage-based curriculum to one that's talking about a strong sense of purpose. And those four purposes, which are in the new curriculum, grew out of my discussions with people across Wales and also looking at what's happening internationally, grew out of that. Consistently in that period since Successful Futures was published, what's been very heartening is the extent to which those four purposes have stood the test of time, and they are still seen generally as if only we could do that, that would be wonderful. And that's the process we're engaged just now, as to how do you try and translate those purposes into the reality that children experience in classrooms across Wales.
And as part of that, I mean, I did the first year of GCSEs in 1988. I can remember that we didn't have, I think we had one computer in the school, which got wheeled out for certain lessons. But even when I was teaching, I taught for 10 years, but I stopped teaching probably 10 years ago now. I didn't have a mobile phone when I first started teaching. I didn't. There wasn't the internet. May have existed, but certainly wasn't widely used. So is that, there's been like a quantum leap in that sort of thing in the last, 10 years. So is that a big part of why you think the change is needed as well?
That's part of the changing context that we're talking about. I mean, the 1988 predated the World Wide Web. Tim Berners-Lee and the work that was done in that was in 1989, just after that, in the period that followed. We had none of the search engines, none of the, no Googles, no iPhones, none of that existed. And the technology, the nature of that technology, has already changed our lives dramatically, but is likely to produce even more dramatic change in terms of the nature of the way in which we all live our lives as we move into the future. And it opens up all sorts of possibilities in terms of the future, but it also poses some very fundamental questions about the nature of both what we do in school and how we do it. So that context of change changes the nature of employment, changes the nature of the way in which we relate to each other, and issues to do with the impact of social media on young people's well-being are issues that weren't around in 1988 or not even around a few years ago. So all of that, I'm an unreconstructed history teacher, and therefore I tend to think of things in terms of historical turning points. I think we're living through one of those periods which historians of the future look back and say, this period running from the late 20th century into the early part of the 21st century is where the world changed. And we're living through it. It's very hard to understand exactly what that means when you live through it. But what we do in school, therefore, has become even more important, because we're trying to prepare young people for a world that is changing before our eyes, yeah. And they will still be alive in the next century. So if we think about what do we do with them during the time they're at school, that's going to allow them not just to cope but to thrive in a world that we can't even begin to imagine.
I mean, that's fascinating to me. So it's part of the challenge, almost trying to future-proof what you're doing or make it flexible enough that almost try to anticipate something you can't really anticipate.
And that's why the move to thinking of a curriculum in terms of purposes, in terms of coverage, is so important. Because if you think of a curriculum in terms of coverage, all you simply do is, as each new pressure arrives, you stuff something else into the curriculum, so it becomes and another thing curriculum. Mm-hmm. If you think about purposes, what you're doing is thinking about the way in which young people, what they will become as a result of all the stuff that we do at school. So as opposed to school being an accumulation of things you've learned, the purpose of schooling becomes, what do you become as a person as a result of all that learning that best equips you to be able to thrive in that world that we can't even begin to imagine.
I find that fascinating. You touched briefly on other countries there. So what other international education reforms are there, and have any of those influenced your work here? What have they taught us in Wales?
Yeah, we're living through internationally a period where the curriculum has gone from being a non-issue. You know, it's perfectly obvious what we should do at school, and that's the kids should just study subjects and be assessed in relation to it. To almost every country in the world is currently engaged in some quite radical thinking about the nature of the curriculum. Wales is one of the countries that's in the forefront of that, in the vanguard of that. But there are a whole range of countries where the same sort of thinking is underway. Some of them have, interestingly, perform very highly in relation to the current international surveys, like the OECD's PISA surveys. So a country like Singapore, which does extremely well in PISA, is almost saying that's our problem. Because we do so well on the current measures, you can become very complacent. So they're thinking, and interestingly, the kind of things that they are pursuing in terms of the way in which they want the Singapore curriculum to develop are not a million miles away from the sort of things that are happening here in Wales. And they've got a slogan which is teach less, learn more. And that's the notion of what you do is to really focus on the essentials, what really matters. And what is going to help build young people for the future. And the same thing is happening. I did some work in Japan recently. Japan is similarly thinking about, they use the phrase zest for living. What they want to do is, through the young person's time at school, they will develop, in Japanese terms, a zest for living. Again, Japan, a very high performing country. Finland, the Finnish Minister of Education, again another high-performing country in PISA, talks about teachers as the change makers and children as the change makers, because they will shape the future. So that relationship, what we do with young people during the time they're at school, that relationship between teachers and pupils will determine the nature of the future that we all are going to live in. Within the UK, Scotland already was involved in this process in the early part of this century. Ireland has been doing some work in this area as well. So there's a wealth of emerging international evidence about the way in which people are beginning to think about the curriculum a bit differently. But the second big message that comes from all of that experience is that it's schools almost quite rightly are skeptical about being told that they need to change. So there's the history of educational reform internationally is one that tends to be a significant gap between the aspirations of the reform and the reality of what young people actually experience as a result of the reform. And one of the big messages that we get from all of that is because reform has been seen as a process that is done to schools. That schools are told you need to change, and this is how you need to change. And the message internationally, I think, is that we need to engage those who are at the front end of all of this process, that are actually engaged in the learning process, the teachers, but also the young people themselves. We need to engage them much more in owning the change rather than being the subjects of the change or the objects of the change. And that's what we're trying to do here in Wales. That's a big part of the learning about partly what we're trying to do, what are the purposes that we're trying to do, and how can you best do it.
So do you think there's a unique element, or that there's something in the way that we're doing it or trying to do it in Wales now? The other countries would look at Wales and say, Wales do this well. This, you talked about other countries there. Is there like a unique Welsh aspect that you're particularly proud of, or that you think other countries would look to take on board as well?
I think I get annoyed sometimes when you know, there's a kind of attempt to characterise as what's happening in Wales, that Wales is following somebody else, mm-hmm. and Wales is just doing it. So nothing could be further from the truth, because right. The reality is that the nature of what's happening in Wales just now provides a way of thinking about educational reform, educational change, which in my experience is not reflected in that form anywhere else, but it's learning from lots of other things and putting it together in a way that's right for Wales as a nation. And the kind of things that are inherent in that are, as I say, first of all, shifting to a purpose-based curriculum. Secondly, within that purpose-based curriculum, being very clear about what matters. You know, what is it as a result of the time that young people are in school, what really matters? Because you can stuff all sorts of things. It's almost infinite, the amount of things that children could learn while they're at school. So you need to be very disciplined about deciding what it is that really matters in terms of all of that process. And within that, there's all sorts of things that flow from that in terms of the nature of the curriculum design. So that's an important part of the way in which Wales is going about the reform process just now. But the other hugely significant way in which they're going about it is through the engagement, direct engagement of the teaching profession, not just in being consulted about the curriculum, but in being right at the heart of shaping the curriculum. So through the process of pioneer schools, and there's 170-odd pioneer schools in Wales, they're not pilot schools, they're writing the curriculum, they're shaping the curriculum. So they're not simply seeing if somebody else's ideas work. They're generating the ideas, they're generating the thinking about the
curriculum.
They're
informing that change.
They're absolutely. And the beauty of that process is that as we move to the next stage, where this becomes an expectation for all schools in Wales, not just those who are engaged in the pioneer process, that what comes out of that process ought to be both cutting edge in terms of its understanding about what good learning is in relation to those purposes, but should also be mediated through teachers understanding the reality of how you put that into practice. So you combine both a significant commitment to being cutting edge and thinking about what needs to happen, and you do that in a way that relates it to the reality of how you actually make that happen. Mm-hmm. And that is unique in my experience in terms of the way in which a curriculum is being shaped, and that's one of the things I think where the world is watching Wales. Sounds a bit overblown, but that's the reality.
We'll take
that. Lots and lots of interest in what's happening in Wales just now.
Graham, a final question. It's 2 years since you've started this process. Are you pleased with the progress so far?
Yes, I think if when Successful Futures was published, I had been able to look forward to where we are just now, and people had said to me, would you be happy with that, looking forward? I had to grab that with both hands, mm-hmm. Because I think one of the biggest challenges in this process is, first of all, people believing this is worthwhile, this is actually going to be better for the young people of Wales. Mm-hmm. And then it's sustaining that, and getting people to be creative and to engage with that process to actually make it happen. Over 2 years on from the publication of Successful Futures, we're engaged now in, I think, an incredibly exciting process of how do you actually turn this into reality for young people. And the extent to which across Wales there has been and continues to be a fundamental commitment to making this happen for Welsh young people. And I have to say, important in all of that is the extent to which the political world in Wales has not seen this as something which becomes a political football, but that actually there's a strong political consensus that we need to make this happen and make this work for the young people of Wales. So a long answer to the question, and the answer to the question is yes.
Professor Graham Donaldson there.
Ty Golding, Professor Donaldson, is very pleased with your progress so far, but how easy has it been to translate what is written on paper into real life?
Well, it's not been an easy task, and I suppose nothing worth doing ever is. The part of the challenge is maintaining the vision behind Successful Futures, which is essentially the subsidiarity, the responsibility of teachers, that we are creating a curriculum for teachers. The challenge is also around all the 68 recommendations being accepted and ensuring that we see those and realise those recommendations through not just the development and design process, but all the way through to the enactment and the adoption of this curriculum, both in schools by professionals and learners themselves. I think maintaining the vision and the purpose of Successful Futures, looking for creativity, innovation, and making sure that teachers, head teachers and all practitioners in school take opportunities to make the links between their learning, and that we aren't learning in silos anymore. Links between disciplines, links between subjects, AOLEs, but most importantly, links between the wider world and their day-to-day lives and the learning that's going on in and around school. And I think to maintain that engagement and maintain that focus and the work and the commitment that's needed from all the pioneers involved in the process is an ongoing challenge. And also, you know, talking of challenge, it's making sure that we're addressing and meeting the needs with regards to quality enhancement and quality assurance as well, and the challenge that's provided by external experts, both within the AOLEs and across the curriculum as a whole. And I think for myself, really, the reality will come into being when we need to look at, and we're starting to look at it already, is the challenge around preparing the profession to make sure that we are preparing them to make sure this curriculum is as successful as it can possibly be.
Kath, Professor Donaldson also talked about how important the purpose-based curriculum was, and he set out four purposes. Could you just talk us through what they are and how they're being adopted?
Yeah, absolutely. The purposes really are the nucleus of everything that we do. And I know from lots of us have heard Professor Donaldson talk about making sure that in education now it's not about getting stuff and content into learners, but just making sure that we're educating them to be certain types of people. And those, you know, specifically are our ambitious, capable learners, our enterprising, creative contributors, our ethical, informed citizens, and our healthy, confident individuals. And definitely from the development of the AOLE, those things have been absolutely central to the work that we've been doing.
Kath, can you just remind us what an AOLE is?
Yes, absolutely. There are six of them, and they are areas of learning and experience. And they're really the way that Professor Donaldson suggested that we should organise our traditional subjects, which possibly within these AOLEs don't look so traditional anymore. So the disciplines and the various constituent parts that make up these areas of learning.
And Kath's quite right there, you know, it's the four purposes at the heart of our curriculum, the design development process, making sure that the four purposes are represented at each layer as the curriculum is developed, but ultimately making sure that they're the driver when they go into schools behind all learning. And the four purposes, they're an amalgam of, you know, quite rightly, as Kath just said, a number of characteristics. And really together, they constitute quite rightly what we want all learners to embody at the age of 16 as an educated person in Wales.
And with regards to that, specifically within the AOLEs, that's what we're looking at. I personally work within the Expressive Arts AOLE, but, you know, what does that learner look like within the Expressive Arts if they've had that education age 16? And so trying to make sure that whatever we do with learners, it really addresses the characteristics and attributes of the four purposes.
And I think if I looked at more of a structural curriculum design and how that's adhering to meeting and achieving the four purposes, I think it's clear that we've developed the role of each AOLE and how we intend that each of the six AOLEs meets the four purposes. For us then, looking below that, we make sure that we're constructing the what matters and the rationale that supports the what matters, which embody the four purposes and the principles behind them. And then going further through the curriculum, it's about making sure the knowledge and the skills and the right experiences are provided for all learners in order that they are at that destination at the age of 16. And all of that then underpinned by learning progression, in which in itself needs to be, again, referring to and delivering the purposes themselves.
One of the other things Graham Donaldson marks out as being different in Wales to other countries is the fact that this new curriculum is being shaped by teachers themselves in Wales's 120 or so pioneer schools. I asked Louise Hayward, Professor of Curriculum, Assessment and Pedagogy at the University of Glasgow, to lay out the differences of the approach that we've taken in Wales compared to other countries.
Some of the wonderful things, I think, about the approach, first of all, is the fact that there's such a clear vision, you know, of what it is to be an educated young person in Wales. And that's really important, and the purposes are absolutely central in that vision. Perhaps one of the most distinctive features is that this whole process is, it brings researchers and policymakers and practitioners together to develop this new system for the whole of Wales. So it isn't about a system that does things to people, it's about a system that's being developed with people. And for me, that's a really fundamentally important point. It's also interesting, I think, that Wales is tackling a challenge that many other countries haven't tackled appropriately. And that's having a very clear focus on progression in learning. So not thinking about progression as the next task or the next activity or the next textbook, but it's really thinking about the journey that children make as they progress through the system and what that learning journey will look like. And many young people become dissatisfied and sometimes even resentful of education because they don't really see that what they do on a day-to-day basis connects with anything meaningful or in the real world. So they see learning in classrooms as a series of hoops to jump through. Whereas in Wales, what people are trying to do just now is to develop a description of that, what matters in that learning journey, and then to connect everything that goes on in schools and classrooms and outside schools and classrooms with these big ideas about what really matters in education at present for young people, but also for the future.
That was Professor Louise Hayward. Now, Ty, explain a little bit more about the concept of focusing on what matters and how does that work in practice?
So the what matters are used as means of organising learning in order that learning has the appropriate knowledge, skills and experiences. When you consider the what matters together, they really span the breadth of learning across an AOLE. They draw on key disciplinary knowledge and skills and they make links towards the four purposes and all areas of the new curriculum. And they essentially outline the aspects of learning that amalgamated make up the construct of that area of learning and experience.
So once I'd spoken to Professor Louise Hayward, I spent a really fascinating few minutes with Professor Mark Priestley from the University of Stirling. He told me what he thought were the main challenges facing Wales in adopting a new curriculum.
What's really stuck out to me is that a year ago, there was very little curriculum making capacity in the Welsh system. Now there are there's a big bunch of people who have been through a process and have really got to grips with what it means to make a national curriculum. And that's amazing, that's astounding. And those people are going to be in a really, really good position now to work with colleagues across the system. And this isn't a top-down curriculum, it's something that's been co-constructed by teachers. The next challenge, of course, is to make sure that the curriculum making happens not at a macro system level with the statement of intent, but happens in schools. And so this is how teachers take the statement of intent and develop it into practice. So that's why I don't use the word implement. Implement strikes me as taking a teacher-proof curriculum, delivering a product. This is about developing practices which are fit for purpose in terms of the curriculum, but which also meet local needs. So the big challenges, I think, come around teacher sense-making, how teachers are enabled within the system to make the spaces to understand the new curriculum, it's different, to understand the core concepts of it, and once having made sense of that, then to develop those practices that are fit for purpose. Okay, so that's the first challenge. The second challenge, which you will be very familiar with, is we've been working in a, as I said, what has been a teacher-proof system for a number of years now. And there are significant challenges, I think, around culture and structure in the system. So when I say culture, I'm talking about the ideas about education. There is a lot of unlearning to do about how education should happen, and a lot of new learning about how the new system will enable educational practice. So that's the cultural stuff. The structural stuff, I think, comes around some of the accountability mechanisms which have held education in its particular form for the last 25 years, which will be different. But if we don't address those, people will just simply reinvent the new curriculum to meet the practices. And this is unfortunately what's happened to a large extent in Scotland. We've seen a substantial rebranding and relabeling of practice, but those practices change essentially staying the same.
As a teacher myself, what do you think will be the most significant change for me and my fellow colleagues?
Well, for me, the big change will be an extension of teacher autonomy. It's about becoming trusted. Okay, now, as a former teacher who worked in a former era when we were trusted more, I think, I value my autonomy. I work in an academic environment where I have certain expectations placed on me, but where I get a great deal of autonomy. And research project after research project has shown that the one thing that leads to a long life in all workers, in all professions, is having autonomy at work, not being in a situation where somebody is telling you what to do all the time and being dissatisfied with your working conditions. So for me, the biggest change potentially is an environment where teachers are trusted to exercise that autonomy, where teachers can truly become agents in their own work, and where this greater professional autonomy is going to make work much more satisfying. Now, that, of course, comes with significant challenges as well. And Elliot Eisner, who's a famous American educator, said something along the lines of, if a bird has been in the cage for 20 years, it's hardly surprising that if you leave the cage door open, it's not going to want to come out. Now, I can imagine that the teachers will sit in their cage with the door open and think, I'm not heading out of here, because the HMI wolf is still walking around outside, licking its chops and thinking, very tasty. So we're going to stay in the cage. We're not going to exercise our autonomy. So this takes us back to how we also frame the new curriculum. It isn't just about putting new ideas out there. It's about creating the context, the environment, to truly enable teacher agency so that people do feel comfortable taking the new curriculum and working with it in constructive ways.
Professor Priestley, it's been an absolute pleasure to interview you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure being interviewed.
So, Kath, let's explore his analogy about the bird not wanting to come out of the cage. How are you going to persuade teachers that this change is real and that they're not going to get penalised for taking a more innovative approach?
I think that's. I think his analogy is just spot on, and I think that that Professor Priestley talks a lot about agency and autonomy, and this curriculum is talking about subsidiarity for schools to create their own localised curricula. But I think the profession has to be in a place where it's able to embrace that, and that comes then with the professional learning side, because as much as we may seek agency and autonomy, when we're actually faced with that, a lot of learned helplessness happens and just tell us what to do. And I don't want to have to necessarily think for myself. So we've got a lot of sort of leader followers within our leadership structures rather than leaders. That's part of this whole system wide reform, is to ensure that the professional learning is coming alongside the curricula aspect, so that we've got leaders and all members of schools who are prepared for change. And I think winning hearts and minds, looking at change management, that there is so much work to be done there to enrol people. And I think it's up to pioneers to really evangelize the changes and make sure that we generate some excitement for it. Because I suppose as a species, we perhaps are a little bit change resistant, and we need to perhaps recognise that teaching is ever evolving and that we need to continue.
So as a specialist teacher, what does that actually mean to you?
Well, yeah, as a secondary teacher trained with a music degree and thinking that my career was going to be teaching children to play music, the initial headlines, I suppose, of the curriculum reform came as a shock, and it caused fear and it did cause panic, which maybe we could say was more acute in the secondary sector initially. And I think it's easy to get taken over by the headlines, and that You know, a friend of mine had asked the question the other day, oh, I've heard the new curriculum is all about thematic work. It's all topic based. The new curriculum is going to be an amalgamation of many different styles and approaches, and as appropriate to the needs of each school at a local level. There are times when a disciplinary approach is going to be beneficial for progression and for authentic experiences, but it's also okay to look at interdisciplinary opportunities and thematic work and projects. So I think from the secondary perspective, it's just realizing that we can still maintain a level of specialism, but that it's exciting to start talking to each other.
And Kath, this sounds incredibly exciting, and having that purpose for learning and bringing that creativity back to teachers is, for me, very welcomed. Do you think that this will improve the retention of teachers within our profession, giving them more autonomy over their delivery within the classroom, and taking away some of those things may improve job satisfaction, well-being, and actually put that enjoyment back into learning?
I think perhaps there's two aspects to that question, really. I think the first is a big aspect around public confidence, and I think it's about making sure that the wider public, that including the profession, has confidence in the curriculum that our children are engaging and learning through. It's having public confidence in our schools and the provision, and that we are doing the best that we possibly can for those learners in Wales. But I think underpinning all of that, and you're quite right, it's about the autonomy, the innovation, and perhaps the risk-taking ability to be flexible that Kath talked about earlier, and provide that learning in context to what our children need, but also having an appreciation that everybody in Wales will also be, you know, necessarily meeting national standards and expectations. And I think the outcome of that is professional agency and making sure that the profession do have that autonomy and that flexibility, and they understand what that means as well.
Yeah, let's get back to the enjoyment. It's so fascinating when you speak to teachers about why they became teachers, and often there's a misalignment there between what they thought it would be and what it's turned out to be. And creativity is central to that. But so making sure that we're allowing our learners to be autonomous as well, and that they're leading the learning. And that's a really exciting thing. Once you get over that initial perhaps fear of allowing learners to make choices, you realise they make fantastic choices. And so giving over some of that control that we as teachers have been trained to have, and it's been part of our profession for many years now, it is exciting. And
yeah, and it's an opportunity, isn't it, for us to step up as a profession, to take full advantage of this and make this as possibly as good as we can. And you quite often hear Mark Priestley, who we've already heard from, say really that we have been living very often with teacher-proof curriculums. And I think this is an opportunity now that we put the profession, you know, back into professionalism, or professionalism back into the profession, and then we take full advantage of that.
So what do you see your role now as engaging the wider teacher community, the schools that aren't the pioneer schools, which are the majority of schools? How are we going to involve them in that change and make them feel that this isn't just a change that's happening to them?
I think that works on a number of levels, Mike. I think firstly, it's the role and the responsibilities of our pioneer schools to make sure that they're engaging with partner schools and make sure that they're not only engaging in sharing for information, but they're actually garnering ideas and thoughts and input back into the curriculum design so that their partner schools are involved in the process and there's a sense of ownership. I think it's important to understand that not just those curriculum pioneers, but professional learning pioneers are now out there in schools, their own schools and other schools, and really trying to make sense of this curriculum. What does it mean for us as a profession, and what do we need to put in place in order for us to ensure that this will be a success when it's realised? I think it's important we recognise the role of the regional consortia in this, and in supporting both professional learning and curriculum pioneers in working through clusters across Wales where pioneer schools are engaging with those schools who aren't in the pioneer process as well. But I think ultimately as well, we have to recognise the fact that within all of this process at every level, we've also got engagement from Qualifications Wales and Estyn, who, you know, are heavily involved in the process, are contributing towards the process, and are actually supporting our development of the curriculum then whilst it goes on.
Where are we now on the timeline?
So the spring term has been spent with experts and pioneers developing broad progression frameworks, which have then been refined. During the summer, we are developing achievement outcomes, and achievement outcomes are our learner-facing statements, which demonstrate progression of learning through the curriculum and will underpin the assessment process that will go on in schools. As we move into the autumn term, we're looking at developing the supporting guidelines and the materials around the curriculum. When we get to November, we've got a checkpoint in November whereby we will be working with our curriculum and assessment group and some of those experts that we've already heard from, with Graham and from Louise and from Mark. And we will be then looking at what needs to happen in order for that curriculum to go forward and be shared with the wider profession and the wider world in April 2019 for us to have our feedback through the consultation process. After that, in January 2020, the curriculum will be made available for everybody to use and go forward with it being in place for all primary schools and Year 7 from September 22.
Ty Golding, thank you very much. And Kath Lewis, thank you for joining us too. Lots to take in there, Louisa.
Yes, lots to take in and really useful information as we move forward. Really important to concentrate on the purpose of the learning. That for me is definitely a change of mindset for me as a practitioner. And the autonomy the teachers are going to get, that creativity within the classroom. I'm really, really looking forward to that. It's exciting times, and the continuum of learning as well. You know, it's about that progression, not just about, you know, you have stop there, move on to something else. I think it's really exciting.
Yeah, that progression. But for me, I mean, that's sort of from the age 3 to 16 is what I found as an ex-teacher exciting. There's not that strict division between primary and secondary. I mean, I spent a lot of my time as a PE teacher in secondary working with sort of year 5 and 6 kids and bringing them through into secondary. So it's nice to think of that as being an approach to learning that's going to span the whole of the time in school. So next up, we're going to be focusing on the changes coming to professional learning. If you like what you hear and you want to get every episode automatically when it's released, then click subscribe on your podcast app. And while you're there, maybe leave us a review, which will help other people find the podcast more easily. Don't forget, you can also follow the Curriculum for Wales blog. Just search for it in one of those search engine, search box things.
Addysg Cymru, Education Wales is presented by Mike Bubbins and me, Louisa Martin-Thomas. It's a Welsh Government production.